I'm going to take a drink and say Shabbat Shalom to everyone.
Shabbat Shalom.
I've been getting some pretty good feedback on this series, so I think it's been beneficial so far. Kind of one way I judge that is by the discussion time afterward, and I think that's been going pretty well too. So here we are. We're going to move forward today, still in Genesis 3. We're dealing with Yehovah's response to the activities in the garden by our three other characters, Adam and Eve. As we learned, God is casting sentence, if you will, and he's also prophesying what is to come based on what has already occurred, what they have done. And last week we dealt with what God had to say to Satan, which was revealed as proto-evangelium, the first gospel, the first revealing of the gospel in our Bibles. And a point that I made last week was like this amazing fact, really, that not only did God agree to embrace the suffering that he had to do to redeem us, but he actually planned it. He planned it in advance. He could have set anything in place, but he said, no, you know, man fell in the flesh, and I'm going to redeem man in the flesh. And we learned that the gospel, right, was right there from the start. Proto-evangelium, right there in the garden. And I hope making that point made an impact on you as far as your perception of the greatness and the love and the mercy of our wonderful God, the character of our God, to be able to do that. And I bring that up because later on I was talking to some of you folks about the celestial bodies in the heavens, and I realized that there was even a much broader picture to this. You see, I firmly believe that God, you know, has the whole plan of salvation outlined in the stars. That's been lost. We don't have it. But some did. You know, the Magi came from the east because of what they saw in the sky, in the constellations. They saw the king coming into the tribe of Judah, and they saw the Messiah coming in the stars. So that plan of salvation was in those stars from the very beginning. From the time that he set the stars in place, he had already determined that he was going to do what he was going to do. So even though we saw proto-evangelium, the first gospel in the garden, he had determined that even long before then. So I think that's pretty awesome. The good news of how deeply our Creator cares for us and how much forethought and how much he really does have things under control. So that's a bit of a rewind. I just wanted to go backwards there for a minute and mention that. So now let's just go ahead and go forward. We've covered what God said to Satan. So now we need to look at what Yehovah said to Adam and Eve, a male and a female. And so the first thing that we notice is he didn't talk to them, did he? He didn't call them and he said, okay, you two, this is how it's going to be. This is what you did. This is how you screwed up. Now this is what's going to happen to you. He didn't do that. He addressed Eve separately. And then he addressed Adam separately. Why? Because he made them different. So what he had to say to them was different. And what he had to say to them gives us insight into the differences between the two. So a lot of what we can pull out of this is sort of illustrated by what one professor did in a sociology class. He wrote this on the blackboard and asked his class to punctuate the sentence. Punctuate the sentence, he says. The men in the class wrote, "Woman without her man is nothing." Makes sense, right, fellas? Don't be so sure. Because the women, they punctuated it this way. "Woman without her, man is nothing." The battle of the sexes, guys, is nothing new. And the perspectives that we carry as fallen human beings with respect to interactions and attitudes between the sexes in our fallen state is a mess. Battle lines are drawn. Women see men as chauvinist pigs. And so the feminists, well, they fight for equal rights. And what's that? What has that got us? One of those is the right to murder babies. Now, how did that happen? Well, in a nutshell, the feminists distilled abortion down to the matter of a woman's choice and separated that from for having no regard for the rights of the unborn. It's selfish. And you're going to see today how that plays in with what God had to say to her. Because you see, they forgot about the infant rights and just said that a man or a woman has the right to do with her body whatever she wants to do. I can do whatever I want, no matter how it affects somebody else. And so by the time all of that argument then got to the Supreme Court, it wasn't about what was right or wrong, what was morally acceptable, what was even illegal murder in the law. It had only gotten to the Supreme Court to argue, is this a First Amendment issue? Is it a right or not? Devoid of the question about whether it is right or wrong, morally. So again, the feminists fight for equal rights, while the men, on the other hand, well, we continue to exhibit the chauvinistic behaviors that perpetuate the problem. And so back and forth it goes, right? Satan uses this battle to accomplish his goals, and one of which is the destruction of marriage. Why does he want to destroy marriage? If you destroy marriage, you destroy the family, and all of society breaks down. And so then what do we get? Well, look around. We have divorce rampant, and as a result, kids grow up in unstable homes. And then the young men don't, you know, have a role model, and so they go out, and there's all this violence. The women are trying to find, the young girls are trying to find dad. So they become promiscuous, not limited to them. They have to be promiscuous with somebody, right? But you see that this bitterness and this emptiness and this social unrest, all because society forgets that men and women are different. We're different. We're not the same. And so when society then tries to enact things and act like we're the same and try to treat us the same, it doesn't work. And it creates this conflict. I mean, there's a lot of people that when you even mention gender roles, oh, that's demeaning. Well, yeah, I guess it is. If your perception is that the man's role is to dominate over the woman. And while there is a kernel of truth to that, that kernel is used to twist the true role of the man. Because leadership, guys, is not dominance. Leadership is service, okay? Godly leadership is service. Anyway, the biblical reality is that God gave women a different role than what He gave men. And if you're going to live a godly life, you have to accept that, because it's all the way through the Bible. You'll read it over and over again, and you won't read anything to contradict it. It is by rebelling against what God set out as those roles that we have reaped many of the problems that we have and that we see right now in our society today. Men and women are different, and they have different God-ordained roles. Now, I'm streaming this out on a public accessible website. And that statement's not very popular these days. It's not PC. It's not politically correct. But I'll say this. I know for a fact that God doesn't give a rip about being politically correct for this society. Because I will say to you, He is the political correct one. It's everybody else that isn't. I've peeked in the back of the book, folks. Yehovah's politics, they win forever. PC today is not what PC will be forever. You can go to the bank on that one. So I agree with his political correctness. Men and women are different, and they have different God-ordained roles. You want to argue? You argue with the one that created the man and the woman. Both are in God's image, and both have the exact same spiritual potential. But our fallen human nature, we just can't seem to get a grip on it, on the practical application of that. Even though, and it's still argued about, even within the church, even though we have clear scriptures and clear revelation from God, we've read already in this series, Genesis 1, that man was created in God's image. And man here is not referring to males. It's not referring to the male gender. It's referring to human beings, man and woman. Both are in God's image. Both have equal spiritual potential. In 1 Peter chapter 3, here in verse 7, it tells us that husband and wives, male and female, are what? Joint heirs of the grace of life. It's pretty clear. And we don't want to let English translations like slip you up with this next one either. Galatians 3:26, "For you are all sons of God through faith in Messiah Yeshua." And the feminists will go, "See? You guys are, you know, leaving us out," or whatever. Well, sons here is in Greek, it's a terrible translation. It's referring to children, to offspring. It's not limited to males at all. In fact, it's exactly the opposite. It's referring to all the offspring, all the children of God that become that way through faith in Messiah. That's what it says. You are all the children of God through faith in Messiah Yeshua. You have faith in Messiah Yeshua? Okay, then you're a son of God, whether you're male or female. The next verses clear it up completely. "For as many as you were baptized into Christ have put on Christ. There is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, neither is there male or female. How clear can you be? For all are one in Messiah Yeshua." So see, these things, they don't make any difference. If you're baptized, no matter your sex, age, color, bank account, doesn't make any difference. Right? Then you've put on Messiah. You are all equal in God's eyes. And this is a fundamental truth. And so that's why I'm covering it. Because we have to come at this, what we're going to look at today, in this manner. We have to start with the fact that we are all, in God's eyes, we are all equal. It doesn't matter if we're male or female. He's got the same goal for everybody. He wants all in His kingdom. And we shouldn't get our britches in a bunch because we're one or the other, or that we've been treated like one or the other. That the roles are different. Even though the roles are different, by God we're treated all the same way in terms of our potential, in terms of what He desires for us in the end. However, okay, we are not necessarily treated the same way in the path that God has ordained for those different people. Even within males and females, we all kind of have a different road, don't we? We have different things that we have to overcome. But in general, God has outlined, you know, these broad roles. So this is why He addressed Adam and Eve separately. And again, in God's eyes, he's just trying to bring us all to the same place. You know, Yeshua died for the sins of women equal with the sins of men, okay? But He does outline the path differently because He made them different. And that difference is evident. I mean, you know, we know this, right? Women tend to be nurturing and a lot kinder than we are, you know, and all those great qualities that us men need to appreciate more. You know, men are naturally, we have stronger bones, we have more muscle that's put on, and all of that. We tend to kind of take control, right? And so we can look at God and we can say, hey, God is kind, and He's merciful, and He's nurturing, isn't He? And we can also look at God and say, well, you know what? It's His way or the highway, and He's in control, and you know, He's sovereign, and He's king, and He means business. So God is also strong and very much in control. So see, both are made in the image of God. So we see that God gave some of His attributes to Eve and some to Adam. But both are God. So both are equal, right? Adam could see that he was incomplete without her. We read in Genesis 2 that it's not good that a man should be alone. It's like he's only half there. And so God said, well, all right, I'm going to make a helper. I'm going to make something comparable to him. I'm going to give him the rest of me to come together with, to make one, right? And so the two together then complete this image of God that He said, I made them in. He said, I made man, which is humans. I made humans in my image, male and female I made them in His image, right? So, okay, with that being said, now let's look at what Yehovah then said to the woman. I really felt like I had to express all this. Otherwise, when we look at what God said to Eve and we start breaking that down, there's a risk that it could be construed as being her being less, or that somehow she's relegated to this subservient task, or this role that's less, or this subservient role. And it's not like that at all. That's why I've gone to all this trouble, because they're different roles, but they're equal. Different attributes of God, but both reflect His image. Okay? All right. Okay, so like last week, we talked about this. He isn't mad at her or him. He's telling them the consequences of their actions, isn't he? He sees the end from the beginning, and he's also giving them the keys, if you will, of how to make the best of the situation. He just gave them the proto-evangelium. He's already given them the hope, right, that's coming. So he's going to tell them how to work through this. And so just remember, he loves them dearly. He loves us dearly. And he's already planned how his love is going to be demonstrated, as we saw last week. So with that said, let's read it. Genesis 3:16. to the woman, he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. Okay? In pain you shall bring forth children. Okay? Your desire shall be for your husband. All right. And he shall rule over you. Now, I've stewed on this for a while. What exactly is God saying to her? I mean, that's what this series is about. That's what we want to know. What's he saying? Now, we know he's not mad. And this is not a curse in that sense. He isn't going to bother anybody. It's not a curse as much as it is a judgment. And remember, she isn't less than Adam. This is why I talked about roles. We have to understand roles. Now, when you understand the roles that God made for the sexes and you read this, it's about a whole lot more than it's going to hurt more when you push that baby out. Yeah, it's that. But it's just that is just the sign of a much deeper issue and reality. The initial multiplication of the pain of childbirth is a sign. It's a foreshadow of what is to come. A reality that God knows will be there because of the fall. Okay? Because she now has to do what? She has to try and fulfill this role in a sin environment. Let's break this down and hopefully I can communicate what I mean. I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. So that is the judgment, the sentence, if you will. And there are two key words here that we need to deal with: sorrow and conception. Let's look at sorrow. We see that it is indeed pain. It is labor. It is toil. What we think about when we say, okay, well, it's going to be a lot tougher to push that baby out. Okay, that's that kind of pain. Now, that brings sorrow, doesn't it? And so they translated it sorrow because, you know, it's when you're in pain and you're in toil and you're in labor, you're not exactly jumping for joy, okay? The emotion of sorrow is caused by the pain and the labor. And so this pain then is given as the sentence. It's given as the judgment by God to Eve. But I'm going to present to you that that is nothing more than a sign. It's a signal. It's a precursor, a foreshadowing of what is to come. Okay? Let's look at the next word first, conception. That is the physical, you know, thing. It's all about the pregnancy and the giving birth. So that is clear. This is all of this is going to do nothing but just punctuate this message. You wait. It is on in there, so they're still getting it. All right. So when we look at this word for sorrow, which indicates the pain and the toil and the suffering, we see that it is connected then to the to the pregnancy, to the physical part of conceiving and giving birth and delivering that child. And so that's the sentence. The pain and labor of conceiving, delivering, carrying, it's all about that. And he says, okay, because of you, this is my sentence. It wasn't going to be this hard, but now it's going to be. Okay? It's going to hurt some more. You're judged. That's your judgment. But again, that pain, that labor, that judgment is given to her as a sign and a precursor of what's to come. Let's look at the next part. He says, in pain you shall bring forth children. So, what's happening here is he's not duplicating himself. What he's now moving to is prophecy. So we know he's a God that knows the end from the beginning, right? And just like we said last week, as a parent, you see a kid make a bad decision. And so sometimes you say, well, all right, watch what happens, right? We already know. that decision's going to produce a bad result, right? And you know you're not going to like it. And that's what's happening here. Okay, so look at this from the very start. You know, God is saying to Eve, I'm multiplying the pain and the conception. In other words, okay, because you've done this, the physical act of carrying and delivering a child, it's going to hurt more. That's your sentence. But then he moves to daddy. He moves to the father, declaring the end from the beginning. And he's saying, okay, Eve, because of this decision you made, you got to live with it. Because of this choice that you made, I know the end from the beginning, and I can see it already. So let me tell you what's going to happen. And all the rest of this is him saying that. And the first thing he says to her is, in pain you shall bring forth children. Again, he's not repeating himself. He's telling her what's going to happen. Now let's look at the Hebrew, because it illuminates this. Again, two words, pain and bring forth, are the two words here. Now, we saw that sorrow before, in that first section, was pain and labor, right? So we would expect maybe, because this is says pain, that it's probably the same words, maybe the same word. But it's not. It's not at all. The pain here that's described is more of an emotional pain. It can mean physical pain too, but this is beyond that. It refers to offenses, to being hurt emotionally. And this pain, this physical and emotional toil, is then connected to this word that's translated bring forth. And this word, while it can include actual conception and birth process, like the other word for conception, this is talking about the entire child rearing process. The whole thing. The process of bearing children. We still bear our children. And they're grown, right? It's this whole process of bearing children, of rearing them. And women do that, don't they? At least the ones that are performing in part of their life that's performing this role. And one might even say that childbearing doesn't even end at maturity, does it? Right? I mean, maybe the responsibility does, some sort of. I don't know. I mean, once a mama, always a mama, right, hon? Yeah. So this process of conception, of childbearing through to adulthood, it's a long one. And God is telling her, because of what has happened, it's going to be a whole lot harder now. So you could really read this sentence in English to be, you're going to experience great pain, heartache, toil, emotional distress, and pain in bringing up and rearing your children. Why? Why? Why can he say that? Because now she's going to have to do it in a sin environment. Would anybody disagree that it is undoubtedly more difficult? Much more pain, much more labor, much more hardship and toil to bring up a child in the sin environment than in that garden? For women, now living in a sin environment, this whole process, from the physical labor of giving initial birth all the way through the child-rearing process, will involve much more work, much more toil, much more aggravation, mental and emotional pain and sorrow than it would have had she been able to bring them up in that garden with two parents reflecting the light of God and God Himself walking in the garden with them. See, God first pronounced the sentence, and it's a sign of the prophecy to her of what the implications of her life is going to be like. He is saying, in effect, because you have done this, sin has entered the world, and because of that, you're going to have a much more difficult sorrow-filled life doing this role that I have assigned to you. That's your role, and it's going to be hard. You done screwed it up. And that's a, man, oh man, that is evident, isn't it? Raising children is hard, isn't it? Why? Because they are immediately exposed to this fallen world. You know, I imagine, and I always have to be careful, and I'll say it, I'm imagining, okay, that if that, had they not fallen, you know, and again, they were born, these children are born to two parents reflecting God's love and His light, and being able to do that in that garden, what would that job of child rearing been like? I don't know. I think it would have been pretty awesome. Probably extraordinarily wonderful. But without that light, without that environment, we do see what it's like now, don't we? Our sweet little children get rebellion in them very quickly. And we experience pain and labor dealing with it, don't we? And God knew that in advance. And so, Eve, it's going to be a whole lot harder. You're going to have pain. You're going to have hardship. You're going to fight to bring those kids up inside all this sin that you've invited in. And it's going to hurt. And so I'm going to implement. So you see the righteousness and the judgment in this? He said, so I'm going to implement some extra pain in the process so that you understand what's coming, so that you realize what's going on. It's both your sentence and your future that you have caused because of the environment of sin that you brought forth. So the woman in this role now, what, she has a much different, much more difficult job, doesn't she? And so there's another level to this. There's a serious lesson here for all of us in this judgment that God gave to her. That was given to her, but by extension it applies to all of us. What do I mean? Well, what caused her to fall for Satan's lies? Let's read it again. We'll go back a few verses here. I've already covered this, but it says, when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. Now, what was she looking at with this metaphorical fruit? It was all the things that it could do for her. All the things that she could get out of it. It's not the way of give, of sacrifice, and of service that God was undoubtedly teaching them in the garden. He had to have been, because He was teaching him about Himself, and that's what He reveals about Himself, and that's what He reveals about Himself now, and He hasn't changed, so that had to have been what He was teaching them, right? But she wanted what she could get, right? And what is that? It's selfishness. It's selfishness. And so God said, okay, so if you're going to be selfish, then I need to teach you how to be selfless. And this whole experience, what He put in her as a mother, this whole experience of bringing up children, it's going to change, because that's what it's going to take now for you to really become selfless. It's going to teach you that. God knew that bearing children was going to be a struggle. And so He put her then in this position where basically she's going to be forced. If she's going to be successful, she's going to be forced to actually combat her selfishness. Now, Satan doesn't want that to happen, does he? And so what do we see down through history? His religions have them do what? Kill the babies. What do we see today? Oh, I don't want to do that, so I'm just going to kill the baby. Millions of times a year, women decide, they choose, because they supposedly think they have that right to do so, to forego and try to sidestep what God intended and just murder the baby. I don't want to do it. It's selfishness to the nth degree, attempting to avoid the very thing that would guide her out of that selfishness. Not a popular opinion, but it's not my opinion. It's what God ordained. See, the opposite of that is selflessness. Now, that was walked out perfectly by Yeshua. But also consider what God is doing here to teach the lesson. And guys, this applies to us too. We're not out of this. Next week, we're going to look at what God said to Adam, and you women aren't going to be exempted from that either. But think about it. Eve fell due to selfishness. She wanted to serve herself what Satan was offering, otherwise it wouldn't have made an impact on her. So she was already slipping as she was eating that metaphorical fruit. So God pronounced changes to her role that would tend to induce selflessness. You think this is a curse? No. It's a righteous God and a daddy saying, this child made a bad mistake, and now this is what is going on. I need to help educate her and fix that and put her in a situation where she can overcome that. When a woman gets pregnant and has a child, she does so at the risk, many times, of her own life. You know, there can be serious consequences in childbirth. But normally, what's been put into a woman, probably right here, is this natural, overwhelming feeling of protection for that child. Okay? And what they will go through to protect that child, to the point even of, you know, their own life, right? So when this is done the way that God ordained this role, what do we see? We see her learning sacrifice, which is the exact opposite of selfishness. We see her learning sacrifice through this whole process of childbearing. And even as the child grows, and I've seen it, right? We've all seen it. A mama will constantly sacrifice herself for her child. She'll sacrifice her own food. She'll sacrifice her sleep, her energy, her anything for that child. That little blob of sweetness, when it comes in the house, becomes number one priority, doesn't it? Over everything for her. And so what does she learn? Selflessness. And it never ends. If you're lucky enough to be around one of these gyms, you know, it rubs off on you. And after all, guys, we're incomplete without them, right? So we need the lesson too. And the lesson is right there. Selflessness is learned through the whole process. And God wanted the woman to learn that and be selfless in a world where selfishness is running rampant. It's the example. It's what we have illustrated by every mom on this planet right now. We're in a world of selfishness. And what do we see in all the moms? This lifting up out of it. It's an example for all of us. And this process of birth and nurturing and rearing children, God is setting into motion the process by which that sin of selfishness, it's overcome. As she gives her life to these children and her family and bringing all of it, you know, and pouring everything into there of herself. It's amazing. It's an amazing picture. And that role never ends. And she does this the whole time with what? struggle, pain, relentless work, just like God said would happen. So next week we're going to see that Adam's punishment was also hard work. So men, we're not let off the hook. We'll get to us next week. So if the woman wants the great blessing of children, she's going to have to work for it. She's going to have to make sacrifices. She's going to have to endure pain and grief and emotional toil. But that's the way character is built. And that's what's on God's mind. That's what He wants, right? So now let's take a look at the next part of this. Remember, we're still looking at, you know, that first part was, here's the sentence. Now God is, He's prophesying, right? He's saying, okay, well, this is what's going to happen. So you read this quickly, and what do you think it says? Oh, the ladies are going to be hot for the guys, right? And because of that, they just won't be able to contain themselves, and they're just going to stick around, and you know, woohoo, just can't do without us. Is that what it says? Well, this is translated from Hebrew, after all. And so it's not talking about sexual desire, guys. It's not what it's talking about. The key words here are desire and this word rule. And to help us understand these words in the context of them here, it's helpful to see them in context in another place. And so I'm going to go to the very next chapter, Genesis 4. And the context of this story, of course, is Cain and Abel. God is speaking to Cain about him being angry because his offering was not respected. We're going to look at verse 6 and 7. Lord said to him, "Why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, then sin," this is sin, "lies at the door. And its desire," sin's desire, "is for you. But you should rule over it." Okay? So here we see the context is sin. And sin is trying to have its way. It's trying to control. Right? It's trying to influence Cain. It's saying its desire is for you. Right? So it's desiring to have this influence and control over Cain. Sin is desiring control. But God is telling Cain, no, don't let that control you. You need to rule over it. Okay? Over that control. Overcome it, he's telling him. Well, we know he didn't. But still, the context here shows us how we should read the same words back in chapter 3. The reference to desire here is telling us that she's going to want to control him. She's going to want to influence him, okay? She's going to want to sway him, influence him, in effect, to try and control the relationship. Because she just did it, didn't she? Just like she just did, to get him to take of that fruit, even when he knew better. Adam was not deceived. We're going to cover that next week. Adam was not deceived. So she influenced him. Her desire was to be over her husband. Her desire was to control him, to influence him. And God is saying, no, that's not going to happen. I see it coming. I see it coming. You just did it, and you're going to try it again, aren't you, Eve? And I'm going to tell you, if you do that, it's not going to turn out well for you. Because he's going to rule over you. He's strong. I made him stronger than you. I made him bigger than you. And if you force the issue, he's going to take you down. He's going to have control. He was made first. That's what God said. Now, quickly, men, I want you to realize that God is giving a prophecy to Eve, okay? He's saying to her, about what will happen due to sin, okay? He's not in any way saying that we should rule over her like that. Again, leadership is not dominance. Leadership, godly leadership, is service, okay? So, again, we'll get to you next week. But for now, just understand, don't take this wrong. Because he's not saying that you should do this. He's saying this is what's going to happen, Eve. If you sin and you're in a situation of sin, this is what's going to happen. God's telling Eve, you know what? You keep pulling what you just did with Adam, and you're going to have this. He's basically outlining the battle of the sexes here. Right here. She tries to take control. He pushes back. And if you've never experienced that, it just means you haven't been in a relationship that hasn't lasted more than a week. If she would just hear this prophecy and say, oh, okay, well, I won't do that, everything can go pretty good, you know. But alas, it's not that way. It would be much like the prescription we have in our Bibles for a successful marriage. In Ephesians 5, wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord, and husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself, isn't that service, for her. And what this is the exact opposite of what we saw Adam and Eve do in the garden during the fall. It deals with the two main problems, doesn't it? The woman's main problem and the man's main problem. What are they? She tried to take control. She didn't submit, right? And so what did he do? He just didn't live up to his responsibility. He didn't lead in love, in service. He didn't show the loving concern that he needed to show to her to come up to her and say, Eve, don't do that. Don't do it. Well, he wasn't going to say it because he was weak. And she wasn't going to hear it anyway because she was weak. And so they both failed. And that's the two biggest problems for men and women. Women don't want to submit and men don't want to exercise loving service to their wives. And that's the problem. So what we can then determine is that if a wife would rule over her desire to control, and then the husband rules in Christ-like centered service, then the whole thing works. And this correction was given to them right in the garden, right at that time. The correction for sin is submission, sacrifice, love, service, hard work, right? So remember this, okay? What was the prescription? What did God want them to do? So he gave Adam part of his attributes, he gave Eve part of her attributes, and he said, come together and be one, right? Okay, so in that doesn't mean that either one of them have control, does it? If you're one, then you're not two. So for one to have control over the other, you have to be two. You can't be one. Okay? So Sherilyn and I have talked about this a lot, that arguments happen. Why? Because individuals want their way. Eve has desire for her husband, wants to control, wants to do. The man wants to dominate and inflict his will. Okay? Neither one of those is one. Oneness has everything to do with both parts of God's nature, both roles, saying, what does the oneness do? So the conversation changes completely. It's not about my opinion, your opinion, this is what I want, this is what you want, how do we compromise? It's not even about compromise. It's about finding the oneness. What does the one person that God created us to be with both sets of attributes, what is that answer? Then it's not I was right and you was right. We're right. Our oneness is right. You see where I'm going? If you want it to work, it has to be one, not two. And it's a flowing relationship. That's why Ephesians 5 says, for the wives to submit and the men to serve. That's a circle of one. See? And that's what you have to have for this to work. So now hopefully we see a little bit more here in this than the fact that having a baby is going to hurt. And women are going to be hot for the guys. And they have control. That way misses the mark. Eve had acted very selfishly. She lusted. She selfishly desired the things that Satan was peddling, and it ruled over her. And as a result, God said that she would now have to bear and bring up children in a sinful world. And he told her it was going to be difficult work, painful in fact, and that she would struggle and be very sorrowful in that task. As a good father, he was going to teach her and all mankind through her how to change from being selfish to selfless, by ingraining desire in her to serve and protect her children in sacrifice. And God knew that if she continued trying to control the relationship like she had just done, that it wasn't going to go well for her, and he told her so. That's my summation of that. And so for our last scripture, we're going to go to 1 Timothy chapter 2. I saved this for last because as I was going through this and I was looking at gender roles and looking up stuff, thinking about some scripture, I saw this passage in a whole new light. So I want to read it to you, and I want you to just read it with the perspective of everything that we just talked about. It says, for Adam was formed first and then Eve. So Paul is outlining that Adam was first. He has this leadership role. Okay. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman, being deceived, fell into transgression. Okay? Adam wasn't deceived. We'll talk about that next week. But notice this. This is what I want you to notice. Here it goes. Nevertheless, she will be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control. I always read that and I thought, okay, well, he's saying, yeah, he's going to make it harder, but you know, she'll be saved. She'll be able to work through it. And it's not saying that at all, is it? What does she need saved from? Selfishness. And this whole process, she will be saved in that childbearing process if she continues in faith, in love, in holiness, and self-control. That's what she was needing to overcome. And this is what God gave her to do it. This is the role that God gave her, childbearing. And she was going to overcome it in love and faith and holiness and self-control. It kind of seems like Paul's giving a commentary on Genesis 3:16, doesn't it? Kind of sounds like he understood this, what God said to her as well. Now we know that salvation only comes through the blood of Yeshua, but we are to respond to the Holy Spirit that comes through that blood by overcoming our human nature. And God gave women the role and responsibility that he did as a tool to help her do just that and be an example for all of us. because it goes for all of us, man and woman. We are all faced with overcoming this selfish, fallen human nature. And we do that through the pain, through the obstacles, the labor, and the frustrations and sorrows of this life. And for most women, those things are all bound up in their marriage and their children. That's their role. So do we consider sometimes that just these day-to-day things of interacting with our spouses and our friends and our family, the daily life of raising children as well as other normal activities, are the very things that God prescribes for us to use to make us sons and daughters in His kingdom? It's so easy just to think of some things of just being no big deal. They're just the little things. They're just part of life. But when we see and understand what God said to Eve, and then see how this is actually playing out, right, in our very homes and relationships on a daily basis, and then understand that Paul is saying right here that it's those very things that are the very things that God is using to direct us towards His kingdom. It's pretty amazing. Kind of sobering if we don't take them seriously. Because we tend to think about big decisions, but all the little decisions add up to a lot more than, you know, a few big ones. So I look at this and I think, you know, God had Eve's number, didn't He? Right? He knew what she did, you know, and He told her exactly what's going to happen as a result of it. And if you have eyes to see, you can see it still today, right? Now, the good news is we have the Holy Spirit. So we don't have to follow Eve's example, do we? We can follow Yeshua's example because we have Him to follow. Amen? Amen.